In today's world, we are increasingly dependent on technology. Our business and personal lives rely on it, but as you've probably noticed, it's unreliable. They promise it'll get better, but it usually gets worse. Our computers are slow, so we end up squinting at smartphones and tablets. We live in constant fear that something's going to happen to our personal data, so we're scared into paying for fake protection that proves useless when disaster strikes. Update attacks, fake Wi-Fi, cloud control, and other industry scandals are designed to keep the money flowing. The jokers we pay to fix our stuff have no clue what they're doing, so they do a virus scan and then wipe out our precious photos. Intelligent, successful people feel intimidated by the chaos and think it's somehow their fault. If they only knew what the industry was doing to them, they'd get torches and pitchforks. If only we had someone to explain it all in plain English so we can start protecting ourselves. Oh wait, we do! It's the Computer Exorcist Podcast with your host, Mark Anthony Arena.
From the Wallace Memorial Microphone in my home office, overlooking the can of worms in downtown Rochester, New York, this is the Computer Exorcist Podcast. Welcome back, everyone. I know it's been a couple of weeks. I've been busy. I was on the JAG Media Gold Hour show last week, and I will try to post that link because I thought it was an excellent time. I thought I had a good time, and I was able to explain all of my concepts. A lot of shows I'm on, it's like, okay, you have 2 minutes, go. And I can't explain fully all the concepts, no matter how simple I make it. I want to shout out to Nick Francesco. He's a local guy who runs a local tech talk show. And in the past, people would ask me about him, and I would say, look, he's a really nice guy, but I don't agree with him on stuff. But lately, he's been doing these little sound bites on the local jazz station, and he talked about a couple, like, he's really catching on to a lot of stuff. Like, he talked about the Apple designer exodus, and that's something I hadn't heard of yet, where, I mean, I knew that Apple fell apart in 2019, but I didn't know why. And he explained how all of the designers got up and left, or many of them got up and left, leaving a handful of accountants to come up with new schemes to milk you for rental fees at an organization that used to actually compete based on merit and used to actually provide a superior product. So he also finally, the industry is talking about what I've been talking about for years. I call them update attacks, and he calls them forced updates, where he talks about how Windows 10 and 11 users, poor miserable souls, are not allowed to protect themselves against any form of update attack that comes from Microsoft. So he did mention forced updates, and so that was pretty cool. He did not know, or he did not say anyway, that about Stop Updates 10, which is my secret sauce there. It's the only product that fully protects against update attacks with Windows 10 and 11. The other thing he mentioned was Linux running on Apple Silicon. All right, let me explain that for you folks. So Apple used to use Motorola processors in the 80s. And then in the 90s, they switched to IBM processors. And yeah, IBM's a huge company, especially back then, but the rest of the world was using Intel processors. So in 2006, Apple decided to switch to Intel processors. Okay, great. What does that mean? It means that superior Apple hardware could not only run macOS that it came with, but it could also run other operating systems such as Windows and Linux. So that's pretty cool. And I used to say back then it was kind of a waste of a beautiful Apple hardware, but now it makes a lot of sense. If you have a Mac from 06 to 2019, those run on Intel hardware. So Now that macOS is too slow to run on this old hardware, or really anything nowadays, macOS is innately too slow to use at all. It's very sad how far they've fallen. But if you have a Mac from 06 to 2019, I can take that Mac and clean it. And since you can't run macOS on it very well anymore, I can put Mint on there. So it'll look just like a normal... I mean, I could put Windows as well. I did that for a client the last week. I recommended that. But you can run Mint, which looks just like Windows, but it's invincible forever, virtually invincible to all threats. So it's a beautiful way to get more time out of your machine instead of throwing it away. And always... You know, folks, if you can't use something, please properly recycle it. But yeah, you might as well get some use out of these machines. Okay, wait a minute, Mark. You said Macs up until 2019. Right. What do we do with Macs made afterward? Well, at the moment, nothing. You just use them with macOS because that's all they can do. However, what he was talking about was how some folks, some very smart folks, out there in the open source world are trying to figure out how to make Linux, my favorite version being Mint, how to make it run on the new chips. So after Intel stopped, after Apple stopped using Intel chips in their machines, what did they do in 2019? Well, they started building their own chips in-house, which is pretty wild to think about. But they're like, hey, you know what? We are the biggest company in the world. We might as well make our own chips in-house. And it creates a huge headache for the whole industry because now we have to figure out how to work with these chips that are even more secretive and locked down than ever before. But, and I mean, in Apple's defense, hey, if you make the chip in-house, that's one of the more expensive components in your machine. So you can do it very cheaply, right? Instead of writing a check to Intel for probably $50 a piece or whatever, it might be like $5, let's say, to manufacture their own chip. Also, their chips are insanely fast because they use something called RISC, which is reduced instruction set. So it's kind of like if I had an employee, instead of explaining things to an employee, I just point and say, here, get that, get that, get that, get that. So it's a very simplified way of running commands through a processor. And it can even run Intel, it can translate the language that it used to use, the old Intel stuff, and it can boil it down, so it can actually run stuff, Intel stuff, faster, even though it has to spend a little bit of time translating it. The other thing is, my buddy Steve explained to me the other day, I'm very upset that you can no longer upgrade the RAM in an Apple computer. But he said, look, Mark, in their defense, the RAM is now integrated into the processor. So when you buy it on day one, you have to spec out one, you have to request one with a lot of RAM because you can never upgrade it. But the good news is the RAM's integrated in the processor, so it is much faster. Okay, so in Apple's using their own chips after 2019. It's called Apple Silicon, or M1 or M2. And the idea is, in the long term, it'll be faster, but for now, we can't run competing operating systems on this Apple Silicon just yet, but people are working on that. Another project I was reading about was, I mean, Apple's been making their own chips for iPads for a long time. They call it the A chip, A1, A2, they're up to like A6 now. And someone brought up the fact that look at all these iPads. It's way worse over in the iPad world where you use an iPad for like 3-4 years and it's too slow to use and you're not allowed to use any apps because the apps in the App Store need to be updated and you can't use it because you can't update it because you don't have the latest iPad. Right? It's a circle of evil. Anyway, some smart guys are trying to figure out, hey, look, how come we can't run Linux on all of these billions of iPads, probably millions of iPads at this point, that have been discarded or are sitting in people's drawers because they don't know what to do with them? I will take iPads from clients that don't need them anymore, and I will erase them properly. That's a big thing, and you have to make sure the iPad lock scandal isn't enabled so you can actually give it to somebody else. Because they try to lock it to your email address forever in the hopes that you put it in the garbage and buy a new one. Anyway, so some very smart people are working on that. I need to have a few minutes of spare time to catch up on that research. Ideally, over the next few years, I'll find some apprentices to go out there and do the work, you know, people I can recommend to you so that I can stay home or stay in Aruba and do the research and just do the R&D, right, and do the recommendations and put my mental horsepower to use that way instead of just interacting with customers all the time. I'll always still have a few clients because I do enjoy that, and that's what really helps. That's what helps the most. People say, oh, did you go to school for this? No, I went to school for business. I actually spend, when I'm at a client's house, I spend that time realizing, okay, look, this is where I'm learning. This is where I learned that McAfee unleashed an attack or Microsoft unleashed an attack on people and try to figure out how to solve it. One of the things, speaking of that, that's been on my heart over the past couple weeks, as people would say, is my own great, great need to find more apprentices, right? I have a couple good apprentices lately, but I need to find out how to find more, both locally and nationally and beyond. And this is going in my next book, actually, the book that I'm writing, talking about how life has been while trying to manage all of this stuff, right? It's a non-technical book that just talks about how to deal with all the stress of doing what I'm doing. And one of the things I talk about is when you're in a situation where you feel like you need immediate drastic action and you need a bailout and you've tried bailouts for years and years and nothing worked, then it's time to slow down, calm down, and do a little bit of subtle change. And I know, believe me, I know you want immediate help, you need immediate help. And there's so many examples of this, like poverty, right? You know, you want an immediate bailout, but in reality, you have to go for job training or move your house or whatever it might be. It's a subtle, deep, fundamental change that you actually need. So I'm realizing this week, okay, Mark, you know what? There's no bailout that's going to come in here and just swoop in and help you. You need subtle change. This is a major thing, right? It's like if you have a hole in your a basement or something, you can't just patch it up. You need a cement guy to come, and you need to spend some time deliberately thinking about it, right? So that's what's going on here. I need to figure out what subtle changes I need to make, and I need to realize that only having patience and making those subtle changes will ever get me out. Because any kind of attempt to dig myself out will result in the same story over and over again. And people say, oh, Mark, you've been saying for years you need an apprentice. Yep, so I'm talking to some large organizations. I'm reluctantly going to sign up for LinkedIn this week because really, I mean, it didn't help me in the past because I was working with a different group. But now that I, you know, in the past where I was just working with senior citizens, but now I need to make contacts with people in the business world, so I might do that. And just trying some things, some subtle pivots. See what happens. So, a few seconds ago I said how far Apple has fallen. And I think that'll be our theme for today because the two articles I'm going to read today talk about how far we have fallen as an industry. So, here goes. Listener Matt sent in this article from March of 21 from Wall Street Journal. J. David Power devised surveys that car makers couldn't ignore. And I very much look up to this guy and want to be the guy who calls out his industry and exposes things about his industry. And maybe, folks, you need to remind me, maybe I need to come up with some kind of a survey and put it out there about my industry. Some kind of consumer survey or just kind of reviews that I place on my site, like a blog of different product reviews. Maybe I should do that. Or at least brand reviews, right? Instead of following and reviewing each product. I'm going to write that down, actually. Brand reviews. I was planning on doing a computer exorcist approved seal of approval, right? And maybe even mailing a couple of trophies to HP and Samsung for achieving the status of being the worst companies ever. So maybe I'm going to work on that. That could be a subtle pivot, right? And a lot of this stuff, when you do a subtle change, you have to start out planting seeds, right? Like my YouTube channel. I'm just planting seeds. I'm just posting videos of shows that I've been a guest on, and just slowly, it ain't gonna succeed overnight. Just like my own business, right? I did a couple of cleanups for people's computers, and it took 2 years for it to catch on. But at least I saw some immediate smiles, right? I saw people were satisfied early on. Okay. So without further ado, Mark. Researcher, who was died at 89, overcame Detroit's resistance to his findings of how customers viewed their autos. Starting from his kitchen table in 1968, J. David Power III built the business by telling automakers something many of them didn't want to hear: what customers actually thought about the quality of their cars. Though most car makers initially hated the idea, it ended up working well for both them and J.D. Power and Associates, as his company was called. Car makers eventually started buying his surveys of consumer satisfaction. Some paid his firm to tell them how to tweak their scores higher, right? How do we make people happier? What do we do? Car makers who won the top ratings began advertising their quality scores, but had to pay him for the right to do that. So he's making money on both ends. That's pretty interesting. Imagine that. It's, hey, we got an award, and the award is so prestigious, we can't even mention the award on our advertisements until we pay him to say that. And of course, we've all heard magazine and TV ads that say, J.D. Power and Associates ranked our car first in initial quality, or in long-term reliability, or whatever. I never liked the one about initial quality. It's like, well, anyone can make initial quality, but how many of these cars are on the road right now? How many Chevy pickups are on the road right now that are older than 3 years? Okay. I always challenge people to think about that. By prodding auto executives to focus on consumer gripes, we've done more for market research in the auto industry than anyone else, Mr. Powers told Wall Street Journal in 91. His firm diversified into producing surveys for cell phone service, power utilities, hotels, airlines, rental cars. Surveys on laptop and desktop computers in the early 90s proved a flop because the products changed so fast. Well, look, that's very needed, though. Okay? This garbage does change very fast, and it's exponentially faster now. At this point in time, but look, it's very needed, and we have to figure that out. And maybe there you go, Mark. There's your answer right there. Note to self is, yeah, we do need surveys on laptops and desktops. You know, how many of you had an HP that died after a week, and how many people have had an HP that died after 2 weeks? That's really, those are your only options, right? Although I've seen 5 HP printers die during setup. So I guess that'll be your 3 options: during setup, or after a week, or 2 weeks. Really, I should come out with these surveys. And even if I make them borderline satirical, maybe they'll catch on, huh? Bob Lutz, who held executive jobs at each of the big 3 U.S. automakers, criticized J.D. Power. It was just assumed that absence of things gone wrong was totally synonymous with customer pleasure, Mr. Lutz said. But customers might love a car's styling and performance, even if it had a squeaky windshield wiper and a few other glitches. And yeah, he's right about that. I mean, there's plenty of people who buy Italian cars, and people say, what are you thinking, right? You are nuts. But, and I applaud those people, because we need a little diversity out there in the roads. It's just BMWs and Mercedes, and that's pretty much it, right? People go with the German cars because they're the go-to car. And by the way, those German cars were reliable in the last century, but the new ones, they fall apart after 100,000. They absolutely fall to pieces. Anyway, so I do applaud those crazy people among us who go for the Italian cars because of the passion. And that's what Mr. Lutz is getting at. Even so, he said, J.D. Power did help the industry by prompting the U.S. automakers to learn the quality control practices of Toyota. The result was fewer defects, right? And that's actually, there were these guys, W. Edwards Deming and Joseph Duran, who in around the 50s, tried to teach American automakers their methods for quality control, and nobody listened to them. So they went to Japan, and now they're big in Japan. The Japanese automakers needed help, and so they were open to listening to them instead of laughing them out of the room. They were open to listening to them, and they opened their minds. They were open-minded to it. And they ended up succeeding greatly in crushing everybody else. To this day, I believe, you know, in my opinion, and that of many others, Japanese are the best because they listened to Deming and Durant. And then it wasn't until much later, decades later, that the U.S. auto industry said, "All right, what are these guys doing? What's their secret?" Oh, okay, I suppose we should learn this. J.D. Power III. Grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts, and his mother had worked as a secretary for a Ford dealership. He was in the Coast Guard, and he was sent to Arctic and Antarctica. And his officers advised him to pursue an MBA, and he had to ask what it was. He went to Wharton School. Then his early jobs included Ford and a market research company. Then he reconnected with a friend from Wharton who had just given up a safe corporate job to start his own firm. And Mr. Power's first reaction was that it was a big risk for anyone with a family to support, right? Why did you take a leap and leave the safe corporate job and go to this startup and take a huge risk? And his friend said if he didn't make that move, he might permanently get stuck in the corporate grind, right? Satch Carlson says in order to change your life, you have to start doing something else first. Or in order to do something else, you have to start doing something else, something like that. And believe me, I'm a huge supporter of that, right? I mean, luckily for me, I couldn't handle corporate life for more than a year. I couldn't stomach the fakery. But for some of y'all, you are addicted to that security, or maybe you have a family to support, what have you. But I would highly encourage you to think about doing, and you don't have to do something crazy. You don't, I mean, I saw this Shark Tank episode where the guy mortgaged his own house and then his sister's house and his brother's house, and he was mortgaging everyone's house just to come up with a very dumb toy that already existed. So, you know, you make calculated risks, and you can do something part-time, folks, instead of worshiping your sports team in the nights and weekends, right? I used to do side jobs until my business, Technosophy, became viable. I would do it as a side gig, right? Until I saw proof that, okay, Mark, you could possibly. And I actually left the corporate world, and it still took me a few months to ramp it up to full-time. But look, I was taking a leap onto a platform that was pretty secure. In order to do something, you got to do something else, right? So in other words, you don't have to take a huge leap of faith. You can try something out in your free time, nights and weekends, moonlighting, see if it works, okay? It doesn't have to be a crazy leap. Mr. Power talked it over with his wife, Julie, and they agreed to launch a research firm from their California home. Their children taped shiny new quarters to the surveys as a way of thanking consumers for cooperating. That's nice. Early customers for his consumer research included chainsaws, cosmetics, and glue. A breakthrough came in 1973, when his firm surveyed owners of Mazda cars with the Wankel rotary engine. Julie Power noticed a pattern. Many of the engines were failing after 30,000 miles. Okay, and the Wankel engine was very cool, actually. And a later iteration of it, a late 80s iteration, I was able to drive a few times, and it was a very cool motor. The idea is instead of four cylinders or six, you could actually have two rotors that rotated around. You could get the same horsepower as a four-cylinder engine from two rotors. They're basically like, think of a triangle but bulging, okay? So the Wankel rotor was a triangle that was bulging, and it would rotate around a circular housing. And so you could have two of them instead of four, so you get a lot lower gas mileage, or a lot better gas mileage, while still having the power of a four-cylinder. Anyway, the early ones did have problems. So Wall Street Journal learned of his report, and lo and behold, we were in nearly every newspaper in the world and on the radio in 24 hours, J.D. Power said, suddenly became known as an expert on automotive quality. He impressed the executives at Toyota and the other Japanese companies, and soon they became his biggest client. GM, Ford, and Chrysler resisted his surveys because, of course, they do. They hate change, and why would they actually do anything to improve themselves? But they eventually capitulated when it became clear that his influence on the market was growing. So that's that story. And that was beautiful, right? That was beautiful. He held companies accountable, and that's that. And why do I say how far we've fallen? I say that because of our next article. We go from the later part of the 20th century with small quality issues and companies eventually coming around to remedying them to this, the early 21st century, where this happens. This is April 2023, autoblog.com. Tesla workers shared sensitive images recorded by customer cars. And again, I love Tesla. I'm a stockholder. I believe in them. I invested in them early on. And because I saw them coming, just like, I mean, Apple and Google and all those, you know, I should have invested years ago. So I saw Tesla coming and I said, okay, Mark, here's your next opportunity. There's always another horse coming around on the carousel, right? So I love Tesla, but this is how far the industry and honestly society have fallen. They passed around or even made into memes. Intimate moments, crashes, and a child hit on a bike. Tesla assures its millions of electric car owners that their privacy is and will always be enormously important to us. The cameras it builds into vehicles to assist driving are designed from the ground up to protect your privacy. How is a camera designed to protect privacy? It's a simple product, okay? Even nowadays, a camera is a simple product. It records, okay? There's nothing about the camera that can protect your privacy. It's about the evil software that controls it, really. Okay, so that's, the cameras aren't designed to do anything besides record. That's like saying, oh yes, this tin of popcorn over here is designed for your privacy. No. No. Between 2019 and 2022, groups of Tesla employees privately shared via the internal messaging system highly invasive videos and images recorded by customers' cars. One ex-employee described a video of a man approaching his vehicle completely naked. Right? Well, look, he's in his own garage where he expects privacy. Right? I can walk around naked in my own house and in my own garage. It's the only thing we're allowed to do nowadays. With all these laws and computers micro-controlling our lives, as I say. It's the only thing the poor guy could do. He should expect privacy there. One video in 2021... showed a Tesla driving at high speed in a residential area and hitting a kid on a bike. Other images were more mundane, such as dogs and funny road signs. Some recordings appeared to have been made when cars were parked and turned off. Tesla said they've since stopped doing that. Let's say a Tesla customer had something in their garage that was distinctive. You know, people would post those kind of things, right? Where you pull in the garage and there's some funny poster. And the employees would get to see everything your car does. And again, people say, well, people are evil, but computers are always good. No, I don't want the computers. That's way worse, having a computer access your videos. That's way worse. I'd rather have the employees snicker at my garage than having an evil computer keep that footage forever and learn different ways to use it against me, because that's already happening, folks. They're already keeping recordings of you through a Cortana and Alexa and all that, and they will find ways to use them against you and torpedo you in the future. They'll torpedo you retroactively, mark my words. Anyway, and by the way, like, if you remember the show Knight Rider from the early 80s, I'm actually getting my best buddy's kids into that show now, and they love it. Wow, that car's invincible, and it talks. If you remember, there was always a comic relief scene in the middle of the show where some bad guys would try to walk up to Kit and steal him, and he would say, I wouldn't do that if I were you, right? And that's more of a 50s voice than a Mr. Feeney voice. But anyway, there are lots of times when the Tesla needs to have the camera on if it senses somebody approaching, right? And the idea is it's not AI yet, but it'll say, like, please step away from the vehicle. Okay. Anyway, some employees stumbled on a unique submersible vehicle parked in a garage. It was the White Lotus Esprit, the submersible submarine slash car featured in the 1977 Bond film, The Spy Who Loved Me. And actually, the vehicle's owner was Elon Musk, who runs Tesla, and he bought it for $968,000 at an auction. It's not clear whether even he was aware that they were spying on his garage, right? I thought he lived in a tiny house. Everyone says richest man in the world lives in a tiny house, but I think he does have a couple of big houses. Maybe the tiny house is just the primary. So, Reuters contacted more than 300 former Tesla employees. Hey, where's J.D. Power when we need him, right? He's probably rolling in his grave now. More than 300 former Tesla employees and more than a dozen agreed to answer questions from Reuters. Reuters wasn't able to obtain any of the shared video or images, luckily. Okay, so it's how do you like that? Hang on. These journalists are like, ooh, these people are spying on people's camera footage? Ooh, can we get some of that? Can we get in on that? As my college roommate would say when we were eating, can I get in on that? And he'd try to take our food. Anyway... some former employees who were contacted said the only sharing they observed was for legitimate work purposes. Okay, so maybe it's just an outlier, right? Where only a few people were snickering at people's stuff. One of the less noted features of AI, they often require armies of human beings to help train the machines. Tesla has employed hundreds of people in Africa and the U.S. to label images to help the cars learn how to recognize pedestrians and street signs and construction vehicles and garage doors and other objects. And I like that, right? Remember in the beginning of this podcast, at one of the early episodes, I talked about employing Ghanaians to use their human intuition, okay? Right? That's, hey, if you live in a poor country, whatever, but you're still a human being. And as I always say, the mind of man is holy. And if we can employ some of these folks to help us in any way, fine. Unfortunately, in some cases, they're training AI, which will eventually destroy humanity, mark my words. But I'm kind of glad that they're sending some work to Africa. Tesla's increasingly been automating the process and shutting down a data labeling hub, as they call it, in California. But it continues to employ hundreds of people in Buffalo. That's interesting. Worse than Africa is an impoverished part of the world called Buffalo. and stay tuned, folks, for my the other show that I do. I am the co-host of a show called Flyover Plates, and if you haven't checked it out, please do. It's a comedy show. It's a satire show. It gets away from the seriousness of computers. My buddy Dr. Mike is the host of that. We're going to do another episode, hopefully this week, of Flyover Plates. So if you want more jokes about buffaloes in Rochester, there you go. Two ex-employees said they weren't bothered by the sharing of images, saying customers had given their consent, or people long ago had given up any reasonable expectation of personal data privacy. And three others were troubled by it, because apparently those three are the only three people in Silicon Valley who have morals. Right? And people say this all the time, well, too bad for you. When you clicked agree to start using the product, you gave your consent. Well, guess what? It's a forced agreement. When you turn on the product, it says you click agree, otherwise you go return this product to the retailer. That's what it says. If you don't agree to this, too bad for you. Okay, so that's a pretty important point, come to think of it, is the forced agreement. You're not allowed to use it unless you agree that we can do anything we want to you. And again, that's the problem of closed source, of Apple and Microsoft and anyone else who's doing closed source software, is that you take the whole thing and too bad for you, shame on you. And in rare cases, there will be switches later on under settings where you're allowed to opt out. And that's what I do for a living, right? That's going to be my future, is protecting people against their cars by flipping switches. I already flipped switches in Windows 10 and 11 to opt out of the incredibly intrusive spying that Microsoft does, right? Spyware doesn't have to exist anymore because spyware is now legalized. Okay. Another said, I'm bothered by it because the people don't think they don't know that their privacy is not respected, right? Again, these people have no clue. When I show someone, hey, Microsoft is recording everything you say and type, people have no clue. Okay, they do have a reasonable expectation of privacy because they grew up in a world that actually cared about your privacy. Right? How far have we fallen? I'm bothered because the people don't know their privacy is not respected. We could see them doing laundry and really intimate things. We could see their kids. One former employee described a function that allowed data labelers to view the location of recordings on Google Maps. Okay, that's a massive invasion of privacy. David Schuffness of the Cybersecurity and Privacy Institute at Northeastern University called the sharing of sensitive videos morally reprehensible. Thank you. Developed self-driving car technology, Tesla collects a vast trove of data from its global fleet of several million vehicles. Right? Google sends out little Toyota Priuses around the roads to collect data, but Tesla employs all of the cars they've ever sold. And by the way, again, I'm a big fan of Tesla, and the rest of these companies are way worse. Okay? These guys are the least bad. So they collect a vast trove of data from the global fleet of several million vehicles that they've already sold to you. So they sell you a product, and just like Vizio, the product then spies on you for the rest of the time you own it. Your data belongs to you, says Tesla's website. Okay, well, actually, all your data are belong to us, as Musk would say. Is there a no button? Is there a way to opt out? Is there a way to decline an update attack? And that's something I haven't used a Tesla that long. I just rode in one once, but I haven't spent some time exploring the settings to see if there's a way to opt out of the spying and the update attacks. Your vehicle, but either way, even if your data quote unquote belongs to you, no, they're taking your data. Your vehicle may collect the data and make it available to Tesla for analysis. This analysis helps Tesla improve its products and features and diagnose problems, right? Just like the HP customer product improvement scandal and the HP customer participation scandal, their products have been nothing but worse since those two scandals, okay? It also states that the data may include short video clips or images, but it isn't linked to a customer's account or VIN number and does not identify you personally. But yeah, guess what? Just like the AOL scandal in the early 2000s, where, yeah, your AOL name wasn't included in your list of searches, there are still plenty of ways to identify you from your searches, right? Like location, right? If I don't know the person's name, but I know where they park their Tesla every night, then I know their address and I can go from there. In China, some government compounds and residential neighborhoods have banned Teslas because of concerns about its cameras. Ha ha! Love it! Musk said, if Tesla used cars to spy in China or anywhere, we would get shut down. The privacy cases have tended to focus on the rights, not on the rights of Tesla owners, but on the passersby unaware. Alright, that's even worse, right? So you got your owners who were being spied upon, then you have people who didn't even click the agree. People who didn't even purchase the product or be forced into clicking agree. These are people riding by on their bikes, right? Tesla has sentry mode, right? Where people who walked by these vehicles were filmed without knowing it, right? Just like in Knight Rider, the car just talked to the bad guys and warned them. The car wasn't recording them. I mean, you know, that was supposed to predict the future, but they didn't realize how dystopian and how dark our future would actually be, where, okay, the car talks to you and it records people, right? In Knight Rider, he just told the bad guys to buzz off. All of the owners of Tesla could go back and look at the images, but again, those passersby, right? It's just like your home security DVR. It's actually the same idea, right? You got a camera in your house, and fine, it's your house. You have the right to have a security camera, but people ride by it. And I might have said this in a recent episode, where if you have a Fitbit, okay, I used to love Fitbit, even though they were cloud controlled. Okay, fine. Then Google gobbled Fitbit. And that's fun to say. And they now record your location and tie it to your Gmail account. So there was a crime that occurred, and there was a dude. So somehow Google found out that a crime happened, and Google found out that there was a guy riding by on his Fitbit at that moment, a few days before. So they summoned the guy, and they told the government, hey, there was a guy riding his bike by this crime. And again, folks, you know, evil computer programmers think to themselves, look, I'm going to do it just because I can. But just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? They're so eager to make something happen because they have the power to make it happen, right? Oh, that would be a good thing. If I just find out where this guy is, then I can, we can make him be a witness to this crime. And it's society has to figure out where it wants to draw lines. Anyway, Tesla said it made several changes to Sentry Mode, including having a vehicle's headlights pulse to inform them that they may be recorded. Actually, that's just a headlight flashing. How is that going to tell people? Unless it's using Morse code, how is it going to tell people that they're being recorded? Okay. Sensitive personal data must be protected. And again, all other cloud companies are much worse. If heaven forbid Apple gobbled Tesla or gobbled some dying company like GM, then they would do much worse to you, okay? And actually, my brother just bought a Ford, and he was talking about how we can go into the system and opt out of the location spying and the location recording. And he talked about how he watched some video, and they talked about how GM and Lexus, for some reason just Lexus, are much worse as far as recording your behavior. So maybe we'll talk about that someday. Maybe we already have. Tesla calls its automated driving system Autopilot, allowing drivers to change lanes by tapping the turn signal, right? So you're coasting along on cruise control, you tap your turn signal, and your car ends up swooping into the left lane for you and parallel parking on command. It's funny how driving in Rochester, people usually swoop first and then put their signal on later, because why should they bother? They don't understand the point of a signal, right? Not only do they neglect to use it, but they don't understand the point. They'll either swoop if they're in the highway, they'll just blast into your lane, or if they're on a city road, they'll just come to a complete stop in the middle of the road, then put their signal on, and then turn. It's preposterous, right? Like, folks, put your signal on 100 yards before, like my Coach Mike used to tell us in Driver's Ed. And, yeah, shout out to Coach Mike. He really, really taught me so well, and I really appreciate him. I've been a great driver because of him and my dad and a couple other people, and my doctor actually taught me how to drive a little bit. So those three guys really helped me. So Tesla initially outsourced data labeling to Sama Source in Nairobi, Kenya, which offered training and employment opportunities to disadvantaged women and youth. And that's great, right? I'd rather see. Why do we even need AI? We have human beings who are starving in places like Africa or Buffalo. And why do we need AI? It's just like, look at this self-driving garbage. Why don't we employ these poor people out there who need a job and want to drive you with Uber and Lyft and normal taxi cabs? I still call normal taxi cabs and call them on the telephone with my voice and give them cash. Honestly, the quality was not amazing, they said. They would highlight fire hydrants as pedestrians. Oh boy. All right. So they left them. At one point, Teslas on autopilot were having difficulty backing out of garages and got confused when encountering shadows or garden hoses. Some data labelers were asked to identify objects, and the problem eventually was solved, right? Why don't they have these people just check each other's work, right? Why don't you have an item like fire hydrant show up, person one checks it out, and then, okay, do it again. Have person number two check it out, right? I'm sure that would dramatically reduce the error, but apparently they don't understand that because nobody has logic. Two former employees said they were sometimes asked to view images of customers in and around homes. They were asked to view images of customers in and around their homes. I saw some scandalous stuff sometimes, you know. Like, I did see scenes of intimacy, apparently, in somebody's garage. Okay. There was definitely a lot of stuff that, like, I wouldn't want anybody to see about my life. Hello. Okay. And we talked about this on the episode a long time ago with Kara Jean, where she said, look, these people are just people in Silicon Valley. They don't want to be doing this either, right? They're not happy with their jobs either, right? So here I am shaking my fists at all these people in Silicon Valley, but they're just doing their jobs and they don't like it either. Just like wars, right? Where I think it was that book about World War One where the guy said, just make the leaders duke it out themselves, right? None of us want to be involved. So it seems like it's the same deal here. These heads of Silicon Valley come up with these treacherous ideas like cloud controlled everything and AI controlled everything, but no one wants any of this. These people realize they don't want to be spied upon just as much as anyone else. Former staffers described a freewheeling atmosphere in chat rooms with workers exchanging jokes about images they viewed. Okay, how could you not? I mean, we used to, when I worked in corporate tech support for a year, we would joke about our clients. I mean, we didn't have images and videos of them, but we would certainly joke about the clients. But I mean, these were people we were interacting with every day. So I suppose we actually could sort of be excused for that. They're just spying on random, unknowing, whatever. Just innocent bystanders. So some labelers shared screenshots in private group chats on Tesla's internal messaging system. Participants would also add their own marked up images, jokes, or emojis. Okay, at least that part's internal. One former labeler described sharing images as a way to break the monotony. Okay, I mean, yeah. If you saw something cool, and look, if it was totally, totally anonymous, and if it was totally harmless, I could see that, right? If you saw something cool that would get a reaction, you'd post it, and later on, during your break, people would come up to you, like, near the water cooler and say, oh, I saw what you posted. That was funny. There were dogs and interesting cars and clips of people tripping and falling. There was also disturbing content, such as someone being dragged into a car, seemingly against their will. And again, where do you draw the line, right? Where if this was Google, they would say, oh, let's find out if there are any people wearing Fitbits nearby, and we can summon them and drag them into a court case. Where do you draw the line? Video clips of crashes involving Teslas were also sometimes shared. Examples of people driving badly, or people struck while riding bikes or motorcycles. Okay, and then guess what, folks? Again, where do you draw the line? Because now your insurance company's going to want this. In Tesla's case, they offer their own in-house insurance, which kind of makes sense. We talked about this on a prior episode, where Tesla actually offers their own car insurance because it's a lot cheaper for them to fix their own cars. Right? Just like doing anything in-house is cheaper, like we talked about with Apple earlier. But yeah, look out, because your government and your insurance company are going to be after all of this juicy data. Okay, and look out for Verizon Hum, by the way, where Verizon plugs something into your car and records everything about you. You know, they dangle the peace of mind in front of, oh, you can find out where your kids are and how fast they're driving. But no, that information's going everywhere. One insurance company already offers something that you plug into your car so they can record at least your speeds. And technically, oh, we're going to give you a little discount if you drive better, right? But actually, the opposite is true. We're going to charge everybody a lot more, and then we'll dangle a penny discount in front of people who want to submit themselves to our surveillance, okay? So it's actually the opposite, folks. Anyway, at times, Tesla managers would crack down on inappropriate sharing. One of the perks of working for Tesla was a chance to win a prize if you were a data labeler. And your prize was use of a company car for a couple of days. But some of the lucky winners became paranoid when driving the electric cars. Knowing how much of the data those vehicles are capable of collecting, right? Look, just like we say, just like Rebecca says in the beginning of my intro, if people knew what was being done to them, if people knew what was happening to them, they would get torches and pitchforks. Just like those Tesla employees who spied on all these people's cameras and then they were offered the use of a car, right? Remember, I think it was called The Firm. Remember, it was a book and then a movie with Tom Cruise where they gave the employee of the law firm a BMW, but then they spied on him all the time. I mean, this was the 90s, so they actually had like dudes in suits spying on the guy all the time. So it's like, hey, come work for us, and we're going to award you one of our cars. But it's like, no, we know what you do to people with these cars, right? So if people knew what was being done to them, right, if people in the general public knew what was being done to them, right, that's why I'm doing this show, so you can know what's being done to you, then they might get torches and pitchforks. My name is Mark Anthony Arena. You can find me at thecomputerexorcist.com. If you are wondering what to do with your life and are sitting in some cubicle somewhere, then you can contact me. I have a site called becomeanexorcist.com where you can learn how to protect people from technology, right? It's the most important thing right now. And you can make money helping people with their technology, and it's a very rewarding career. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time. It's all right now. I make it on my own. I paid my time and my dues, and now I'm coming home. First they give you an inch, and then they take a